Hello, welcome to Base Camp for Men. I'm your host, Tony Rizak. This is the show that gives you insights and resources on how to live a more courageous life. We'll be looking at men, the current state of masculinity, and how to create a more inspiring narrative for all men. Welcome, and let's get started. Hello, Base Campers. I hope you're all doing well. Wow, what a week it has been. As all of you know, Donald Trump reclaimed the presidency in convincing fashion, winning the popular vote along with every swing state that was in contention. And this surprised everyone, myself included. Both sides kind of thought there would be some sort of fuckery, but the whole thing went off without a hitch. A slam dunk victory for the America First movement. Blue state governors like Gavin Newsom and newly elected Washington Governor Bob Ferguson, who's really just a lieutenant for Bill Gates, have said they will resist President Trump every step of the way, but they are way overmatched at this point. The mood on the conservative side is elation right now. The centrists, they seem kind of cautiously optimistic. Even traditional Kennedy liberals seem like they're being introspective, and maybe they're starting to see some of the things they agree with in regards to President Trump, like secure borders or keeping men out of women's sports and locker rooms, or maybe they like the surging markets that are responding so well to the election results. The radical left is still screeching out and sending out all sorts of desperation videos hoping to get attention. Who cares? The histrionics of that group just makes them seem mentally unstable, immature, and narcissistic. The next 4 years are going to be epic, not without challenge or opposition, but historical in the change of direction for our nation. Gone are the days of putting America second, third, or last. No more. Our country, the world, and we the people deserve better, and now we have it. However, it will not be time to rest on our laurels. There's still much work to be done, as you will hear from my guest today, to reclaim and remake the institutions that have been so corrupted by the globalists and Marxists. I believe this movement to make America great again is just getting started. We're in the second inning, so to speak. But after struggling through America's dark night of the soul, damn, it feels good to see an affirming light at the end of the tunnel. Everyone has battle fatigue, right, left, and center, and can take a much-needed collective and restorative breath. Let's get to our excellent interview today. It is with one of my all-time favorite guests, obviously. Enjoy the interview. Today's episode is brought to you by Stand Up Now Apparel. Stand Up Now has amazing designs centered on God, family, freedom, and patriotism. They use only the softest cotton in their designs and have gear for the whole family. There's something for everyone, Base Campers. I know you're going to love their products. Go support them at www.standupnowapparel.com and use the code BASECAMP to receive a 10% discount and free shipping. And now, on to our interview. My guest today is Lisa Rizak. Lisa is a mother, a fundraising auctioneer, an America First Republican, and my wife and life partner for the past 3 decades. Here is my interview with Lisa Rizak. Okay, I am here with Lisa Rizak, patriot, pro-America, political candidate, mother, and fundraising auctioneer, Lisa Rizak. Lisa, welcome back to Base Camp for Men. It is good to talk to you again.
Hi. I'm so excited. I'm so happy to be here.
Yeah. Well, it's been, so much has happened.
I know. What do I got to do to get you to get me back on your podcast, man?
I know.
I'm married to you. I cook you dinners. Come on. show me a little love.
I was waiting for the right moment. Yeah. And just, I mean, so much has happened since last time we had you on. And so much has happened in the last week. I mean, you ran for LD Legislative District 32, didn't win, but we'll talk more about that. But man, oh man, Trump in resounding fashion, and last week I kind of prep people for a lot of, like, you know, there could be some big shenanigans. A lot of people were writing about it, right? And so, you know, and you have this sense with all the things that are going on that, you know, people were bracing for anything, right? And then It just went off without a hitch. Like, he swept through, he won the popular vote. He won all the swing states that they were saying were going to be highly contentious. And you kind of thought, well, they're going to do some stuff. And then he just won. And so, you know, I guess, what's your mood, and as we look around, you know, there's some early stuff about Trump. What are you excited about right now in terms of, you know, it must be kind of weird because you didn't win your political race, but yet your mood is like really super inspiring and elevated, right?
Well, yeah. I mean, I went in on Tuesday night and I was very, very clear. I was like, the only person we need to have win tonight is Donald J. Trump, you know? And so, I mean, I know where I am in the pecking order of things. I knew what my odds were and that didn't matter, but the context is decisive and having Trump win. I mean, that is just that it's literally night and day what we're dealing with now. And as we know, we're going to talk about a little bit later on, but just, you know, what happened here in Washington State. And even that is like, I'm not concerned about it because that, you know, I think our time is still coming. I think there's a lot that still needs to be shown around corruption. And, but as long as Donald Trump is there, then we are in good hands. And so, I mean, I'm just literally brought to tears, you know, and it's just, I can't help that when I'm doing your podcast with you, that I hear like the liberals like listening and how they're going to, you know, misconstruing and what I'm saying and, you know, taking it. Well, of course you're, you know, happy your dictator won. And it's just this weird narrative of, you know, whatever information points you're getting, you have evidence to support your side. And I really think it's weird that it's like, you know, both sides were saying this is the end of democracy as we know it. And I mean, all I can say is it's like, I know, but we're right. We're on the right side of that because she, you know, and it's just weird. So you can't get in the war on words and the narratives is so challenging. So we're both sides are using the same words. So I don't want to get into that quagmire because once you do, you know, but I just, oh man. I mean, when I was outside the room the other day, we were at the Hyatt at the watch party and I was outside the room and when they called, you know, I think it was Pennsylvania or something like that. And I couldn't believe it, you know, and I went running into the room and it's just so good.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Well, and then like, you know, I think to your point though, that we're winning the narrative because, you know, I kind of started to go on, I got the New York Times at work and the Wall Street Journal. So I could kind of see like, what are the intellectuals writing about? How are they framing this? And I remember one of them was saying, you know, it was kind of owning, it's ridiculous to call all the Trump supporters, which is the majority of the country, Nazis, racists, bigots, misogynists. He's like, it doesn't work because people don't believe it because they know really intelligent, common sense, good-hearted people that don't feel that way, that you can't categorize them that way. And the mainstream media was banking, look, we're going to smear all the Trump supporters and people believe us, but they didn't. In the end, people like, I don't, you know, even, you know, former screeching liberals like Michael Rappaport was going, stop, call, you know, when they had that Trump rally and they were like, the Nazis are meeting in Madison Square Garden. Even Michael Rappaport, who previously had Trump derangement syndrome, was like, stop calling them Nazis. You sound like stinking idiots. And I think some of the articles I read, it was kind of saying, you know, the mainstream media has lost its credibility and way overplayed that they could portray all of the MAGA supporters as these crazy loons. It just doesn't work because we're everywhere.
And I think you're pointing towards it's still what they want us to see. You know, there's still this mainstream media is very manipulative and it's like this is what they now want us to see, you know? So what's going on with that? Like they're walking the dog in some way, you know, like with like what they want the new speaking points to be for the liberals. I think, and that what just came to my mind was like buckets. It's like anytime you put anybody into, they want to put us into these big buckets, you know? And it's like, I was just having there's a text thread that I'm on and this guy wants to just continue to say how all these racist Republicans, you know, and it's like, anytime you put anybody into a big bucket, it's just, it doesn't work, you know? So, and I actually said to him, you know, first of all, I don't like being called a racist, but I understand that he has had that experience.
Yeah.
But I said to him, just like probably there's a lot of liberals that don't like being put into the same bucket with all the far left, you know, LGBTQ, but well, there's nothing wrong with that, but the extremists, you know?
Yeah.
And so it's like these big buckets don't work. And you know, and that's just it's part of the divisiveness. It's part of the divisiveness. How do we continue to look and see through that lens?
Yeah, and there's, it's not like there's no racism in the world, but it exists on both sides. The Democrats and the radical left have plenty of racists over there, as evidenced by how they speak about, you know, us, you know what I mean? So,
yeah.
You know, and out of the gate, you know, well, first of all, the stock market goes apeshit. Bitcoin is climbing like crazy as we speak.
Yeah.
And then, you know, I started seeing videos. You pointed out that they were older videos, which is fine because it was people were grabbing some of what he said he was going to do early in his administration. And it probably doesn't get a lot of play. But one thing that just warmed my heart was him saying, we're going to have a celebration of America's 250th birthday like nobody else. We're going to do a year-long celebration from Memorial Day 2025 all the way through to, you know, 4th of July 2026. And we're going to celebrate this nation. We're going to have artists doing statues of all the great heroes of our nation. And I was just like, it was such a reclaiming of our history. You know what I mean? Which the Marxists and the radical left are trying to dissolve in through the curriculum in the public schools, right? And they're just trying to say America is racist. Just let's take away all the history and all the great accomplishments that Americans have accomplished for the world.
Mm-hmm.
We're not going to talk about that because we're a bad country. It's just like that one piece of news. Forget that Hamas all of a sudden said we want to negotiate for peace if Trump's going to be president, and you know all these different things that we're seeing already that Trump's going to put into motion. I think the year-long celebration of America to me was the most heartwarming thing that I saw.
Yeah, and I think what's the irony of this is that what he's creating and pointing towards is optimism and, you know, and pride and joy and beauty and celebration. And it's like, look at the pushback on that. I'm really finding this with the people that I'm interacting with. It's like you've got some people that are just like, oh, they're excited because they're embracing the opportunity and the possibility. And it's like, we can be vibrant and joyful and healthy again. And then there's other people who just want to, it's like the glass half empty, glass half full. And then the other ones that just want to complain and they don't want his optimism. And it's like, I have way more in common with the people that are being optimistic. And that's the kind of the division that's happening right now. It's like there's this doom and gloom and sad and despair. And then the other people that are like, okay, we've been there, but what now? What next? You know, and you just said it a second ago to me about this person we were talking about, and he wants to just double down on the racism. And you're like, well, is it happening now? You know, and he can, of course, find all the evidence for how it is happening now. And like we said, obviously there's racism that exists. You know, I'm not so, you know, is obtuse to think that doesn't exist, you know, but it's like, what are we choosing to see? What are we choosing to create? And Trump wants to create this patriotism that we haven't experienced in our lifetimes. Maybe it was like we had images of it that our parents had in the 50s after the war, you know, riding on their bikes with their flags. But I was told about it from another era, and I kind of saw it in the 70s and then the 80s. But boy, oh boy, you know, it's not here now. But people are fighting that. It's like, what are you? I'm kind of ranting here because I'm really just so excited. But it's like, it reminds me of this training I was doing once. And I remember I was arguing for all my limitations and all my smallness. And somebody said to me, what are you arguing for? And I heard it as, what are you arguing for? And I was like, well, because, you know, this happened to me and that happened to me and I've got this limitation. And they're like, no, what are you arguing for? Mm-hmm. And I totally got it. It's like, oh, I'm arguing for my limitations. And that's what it is. I just hear them. They're arguing for their smallness. And this goes back to my campaign when I was talking to people and they were arguing why we, you know, I was like, I want to lower crime. And they're like, they were arguing against those things. And I just, it just was like echoing in my head, you're arguing for more taxation and for limitations on you. And it's like, we have to start to look at how our language and, you know, is in alignment with what we're talking about in this optimism with Trump.
Yeah. It reminds me this moment right now. You said the 50s and then a little bit in the 70s and 80s when Reagan became president. You remember that? We all of a sudden, the whole country, there wasn't a Reagan, derangement syndrome from the left. Everybody got on board. This was before the mainstream media was really in its Marxism mode of let's divide and conquer everybody. Don't let them unite. The country was pretty damn united under Reagan, and we had this resurgence of American, you know, industry and pride, and remember the Olympics. And I mean, it was a really patriotic time. And this feels a little bit like that. We have people that are getting over their Trump derangement syndrome. I think when they see what's going to be happening, they're going to want to participate in it. And to your point, you know, Americans, we're naturally optimistic. It's what the world knows us as.
100%.
You know, you talk to any European, it's like, God dang, Americans are so optimistic. They're so can do. They create so much things in the world that, you know, they're just an exemplary in that in their attitude. You know, part of it is we've never seen war on our shores the way our European, you know, comrades have in a way. But it's in our blood. We've been raised to be optimistic, to think the best is yet to come. And this whole last, you know, God, you know, whatever, 15, 20 years, you know, it's been an attempt to kind of beat that out of us a little bit, to think, oh, you know, it's all going to shit. The younger generation can't have the American dream. There's lots of work to be done. But I think if we can stay optimistic, it's going to give us lenses to look through where we're going to see what you had just said earlier, possibilities that didn't exist before. And that is super exciting. It's not naive to be optimistic right now. It's actually, you're on the side with the winds at your sail. And that's where you're going to find your role in it. Right. And
yeah. I think that was, you've said this in other podcasts, that this is part of the war, is this level of like going, you know, focusing on your emotions and the navel gazing. And that's part of the war, is to, you know, make people feel disempowered and hopeless and all that. And so I think that it's like, I haven't thought about this, but it's like they can't embrace his optimism because they've been, you know, told all the emotional reasons as to why, you know, we have the trauma and all that. And so I think that there's something about his optimism that is repulsive to them as well. And they don't even know that level of like the emotional warfare that has been played on them. So he's, how can he, you know, et cetera, all the things that they accuse him of. But I think even his, that they can't see that level. They're not allowed to embrace it anymore. How can I'm too white and entitled. I can't have joy. That's irresponsible.
Yeah, exactly. Well, shifting gears, you know, and I want to acknowledge the courage you just ran in one of the most for Ledge, you know, state rep, District 32, you and seven other ladies ran, you know, in one of the bluest, most corrupt counties, you know, as I came to find out, you know, in the state. I mean, we're just surrounded by blue, by very liberal, wokeism is in full bloom here. And here you eight ladies come rolling in as pro-America. I mean, it just took such courage and, you know, so way to go, way to be a stand on the front lines, because you know, it really took something. And I guess, you know, you didn't win. You got roughly 25%. To me, it was a little suspicious that everybody got 25%.
Everybody gets a 25%.
I don't want to do a dive into that. But it was a little bit like, that's a little odd. But what did you learn? Like you didn't win, but also, I don't know if there was an expectation you were going to win. But there's all these things that are coming from you putting yourself out there. A lot of people know who you are right now, Lisa, or in this area. I mean, no question. And the GOP, you know, you ladies are firmly on the radar. And here Trump wins. And I think had Trump not won, you know, I don't know where you would be
in terms of, you know, the GOP and all that stuff. But because he did win and you've been in alignment with him the whole time, I think that changes some things for you. But I guess I just, you know, I just want to ask you, like, kind of what did you learn running? How was that to run in such a blue area?
It was really the next level of my development. And I mean, when you say I didn't win, it's like, it doesn't even resonate with me because that was not the context I was existing in, was that I was going to win this. That wasn't the goal. You know, I really see there's so many things I got from running, but one of them was that, you know, like you said, standing in this was, it showed me so much. And one of the things I think is that I stood as a mirror for them to see their judgments. And that is something that I am used by in, you know, used by God or whatever is to be. So when you can stand and you can stand in principle, and when you don't fight and argue with people, then what you're providing them is an opportunity to see their limitations or their, where they're bouncing up against things, you know? Being a Republican, it was a lot like, I remember the first several moments of like, okay, I'm going to have to come out of the Republican closet, you know, with my neighbors. And it was very uncomfortable. Or I should say that was, you know, kind of how it first happened. And, you know, I'm in a big text thread with about, 25 of our neighbors, and we get helicopters over our house all the time, and there was some crime happening, and I was like, well, actually, that is why I'm running as state rep. You know, I'm running for state rep because I'm tired of this crime. And, you know, they all like me, they all did. And it was like this, you know, it's not a collective sigh of relief, but it was a collective gasping for air that I could feel happen throughout the neighborhood. Like they were all sucking in their breath, you know?
Yeah.
And it was like this, like tepid, you know, thumbs up, hey, good job, you know? Yeah. And so there we are, you know, and I started from that point calling it the Scarlet Letter R. Mm-hmm. And I was just like, okay, this is what we're going to do now. We're going to go out and be that, you know? And people would look at me like an animal in a zoo, kind of like, she's a Republican, but I thought she was one of us, you know. Yeah. They'd kind of look at me like, she doesn't look like a racist. You know, I'm like, oh, is she a misogynist? Is that possible?
Yeah.
So, that was one of the things. And then, you know, going out and talking with people, talking with business, you know, it was just great. It was a really great way to go out and start to talk to people about things.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely. You know, it's, you know, there's been such a call to be involved, you know, and I think people, that's the other part, is people have been beat down where they think I can't make a difference because it's so corrupt. And I think one of the things that most people don't realize, and you got a good look at this, and it existed both at the national level, the state level, the local level, is how captured both parties are by the globalist uniparty, right? I think you have to get past that it's a conspiracy that there is a globalist uniparty. There's ample evidence, right? Like, it's not hard to understand it. But I think for a long time, people thought, even if you pin the Democrats as the favored party of globalists, and it is, you know, Soros money flows through there, Bill Gates, you know, a bunch of others, there was still a tendency to say, well, but the Republicans are the warmongers. That's the party of, you know, Bush and Cheney. Well, they were globalists too, right? And one of the reasons that they have fought Trump so much is he's not in that camp, right? And I think that, you know, it's one of the marks of the pro-America movement. It is anti-globalists. It's anti-World Economic Forum. It's anti-top-down control. It's about empowering we the people. Mm-hmm. And so the Republican Party is in on this as well, but there, it has been these pro-America patriots have started getting involved, you being a great example. And I know a lot of other people locally that have been involved now, and the globalists seem to be losing. They've lost this battle, and it's just not known yet. And so I think it helps people if they can understand that it's been, yes, it's been the Democrat Party has been the favored party of the globalists, but you know, I don't know what the number is, but 50%, 60%, 70% of the Republican Party, maybe not. But there's, let me just finish. The most influential Republicans up before Trump were put there and were in full agreement with the Democrat Party. We have, you know, there's the saying rhinos, Republican in name only. Mm-hmm. And those are ones that hate Trump and hate the pro-America movement because they're, fealty, their loyalty lies with the globalist party. So you have to, have to know that that's happening, and it's happening here, especially because we are, we've been an area entrenched in Gates Foundation money and Bill Gates. And that means money is going to Republicans that will vote in his favor and be a stand against Donald Trump. So I just wanted to put that in there before handing it to you. And did you see evidence of that as you were running?
Oh, 100%. It's the same globalist coin. Mm-hmm. The Dem is just the winning side of the coin and the Republican is the losing side of the coin, but it's the same coin. It's the same thing. And one is just, they've just, you know, decided to divide it up in that way. And doubling down on the liberal side now, on the Dem side, with how they're going to, you know, they pulled that side then to that extreme. And then Trump decided to rework the Republican Party, you know, and so that's what we're coming in and doing. Mm-hmm. And so did I see it? You know, this is just, once again, running as a candidate. I've been involved for 4 years. I worked for the Washington State Republican Party in 2022. So this is just another layer of seeing it and being involved with it. But And then what it looks like, you know, one of the other things is I felt like I had to defend myself against my own party a lot of the time. I mean, I was called by my own party a loser. And I was like, well, that's interesting. Yeah. And some people that weren't necessarily like leadership, but they were, you know, calling me out. One guy was like, you know, well, what kind of a Republican are you? And at first, I remember I went to a meeting and he said that. And at first I was like really taken aback. Like, I have to justify my Republicanism to you. Mm-hmm. And then I was like, well, okay, well, this is an opportunity to then, you know, and mm-hmm. and so then I will speak to that. What kind of a Republican am I then, you know? And so that was another interesting moment to define myself and speak to that, you know, and there's nothing wrong with that. But just, yeah. Well, you and I at a meeting the other day, we just had a guy in and he was talking about how Washington State is the third most corrupt state in the country. And I was surprised to hear that. And that level of corruption, but it makes a heck of a lot of sense. And so now through this election, you pointed towards that we all got 25%. There was so many election integrity, red flags throughout the entire time. Yeah. And then Washington State they said more left than California with this election. So not only did we not lose, we lost huge. We went more left supposedly than California, and we went more left. The rest of the country went right. We went slightly left.
We were the only state of 50 that moved to the left. California moved to the right.
But what I see of that is that it goes now back to sometimes you got to show the people.
Yeah.
I think there's still more here to uncover. Mm-hmm. And I think, and I know that we're not going to be forgotten out here. I know we're going to get reinforcement, but I think we're still going to be used to continue to wake people up to the corruption. You know, it was not even 3 days later that Kathy Moore, just after the election, all the initiatives lost. So the taxes are going up or staying the same. And then she's like, I am going to now implement I only half heard it, but it was either an excise tax or an income tax. Mm-hmm. And 3 days after the election, and I was telling people they are going to take the one initiative, they're going to make it an income tax. They're going to drop it from $250,000 down to $17,500. My opponent came out flatly and said, we're going to get more taxes. So to all of this, it's like, that is the corruption. And I, but once again, I'm very hopeful. It might get worse here. I don't know. I think we're going to be using an example, but to answer your question, I absolutely saw this and see it in our party. You and I were watching at the party the other day, and there were some people when Trump was announced the winner that looked really, really scared and not happy in spite of our guy winning. And that was very, 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 very telling.
Absolutely. Absolutely. You know, you're interesting in that you're a candidate. I've, you know, followed you and been a PCO mainly because I feel like, God, if you're going to be that involved, I have to stand in my principles and stuff. But we've traveled this interesting journey since we just talked about the Uniparty. We were lifelong kind of Kennedy liberals, right? Lifelong Democrats and progressives, 25 years. But then we just walked right past, we were walkaways from the left, but we walked right past the rhinos, right? We weren't stopping there. We went all the way over until we found a tribe that aligned with our principles, which was Trump, the MAGA movement, Make America Healthy Again, pro-patriot, all the principles that we found there. And as I've gotten older, I've just realized, look, you know, I don't need loyalty to some way that I've been. I'm evolving. And as I've gotten older, I've realized, look, my principles, what are my principles? And I saw this in spades in COVID, and so did you. I'm like, I'm an American, and free speech is really important to me. And as I was being canceled, shadow banned, kicked off of Twitter, minimized on platforms that I was a part of because I was part of, you know, I was on involved in, you know, the left's, you know, big tech censorship of conservative and libertarian voices. And also freedom is super, you know, probably the highest on my list, personal freedom, your ability to choose the life that you want. And that includes everybody. But that is a very American thing that we have stood for, you know, since the beginning. And I was just like, you know, these principles are, you know, always going to be with me. It's core. It's God made me this way. God made me adore freedom. God made me adore freedom of speech, freedom to defend myself, you know, all these different things that the founding fathers gifted us with and as protection against, you know, tyrants. Mm-hmm. And here we were in COVID. The tyrants were trying to overrun us, put a mask on, get this experimental jab, says I, you know, and I was, you know, you and I were both like, fuck you. Like, who do you think you're talking to? Like, no way. Right. So I just wanted to give you a chance. Like, for me, the pro-America group and Trump, they represent my principles, and principles are really important to me. And I know they are for you too.
Yeah.
Did I throw you a curveball there?
Yeah, no, I'm like, what's the question, dude?
I give you a chance to riff on it, I guess. So,
yeah. Well, and that's exactly, you know, as I spent hours, you know, it was a crash course in trying to figure out the issues and speaking points. And I was interviewed by the Seattle Times, preparing for an interview with them. And, you know, I'm a candidate. I didn't get paid a dime for this. And yet I'm going through like, you know, 10 to 12 issues and the speaking points on those. And it's not just like, you have to understand it. You have to be able to get down deep enough to understand it, you know, so that you can speak on it in a comprehensive way. And so what happens is that you can run out of information, or it's information that you don't have. And then what you have to fall on, and the only thing you can fall on, is who are you as a candidate? Who are you as a leader? Mm-hmm. What are my principles? And then that's where you can talk forever, you know?
Yeah.
And so, and nobody can get you on that. You become bulletproof. And so when you understand your principles, then you can speak on that. And so, yeah, the First Amendment and these things, you know, and I think that that's actually one of the beautiful things with the group that I found. Oh, these people are just so extraordinary. And we are all, or we're all leaders and we're all organizing ourselves. And we are all so mindful of not stepping on one another's toes. Mm-hmm. And we're all just self-managing. And so, and it's, but we don't agree on everything. And it is just so glorious to be a part of that. And like, when I get really think on who these people are and their selfless devotion to this cause. Mm-hmm. Oh, it's so beautiful. And so what it is we are all individuals standing with our own opinions and doing our best not to get over there in somebody else's area. And so it's exactly what you're talking about. Yeah. And exactly like, you know, the kind of people that I, and this is what I'm fighting for, you know? So you want to mask and vax? Okay. I don't care, but I do mind that you want me to do it, you know? And so, and it's that it's all been this mind control and hypnosis that I have to do what they want me to do. And it's like, or I'm a horrible person. And it's like, I'm really not, you know, you can't, all these things that you accuse me of, are not true. I just want to be over here and do my own thing and let you do your own thing. I would really like to protect the children that you're not protecting, but you know what, mom or dad, if you want to do that with your child, I hate to say it, but that's kind of your thing then. You know, I'm talking about like kind of the puberty blockers or whatever. I then have to fall back on this, the parent, I go with parental rights, you know, so I would love to protect all the children, but you supersede my authority, you know? Yeah, yeah. And so, you know, I'm kind of going over into a lot of areas, but that's an example of like where then it falls outside of my jurisdiction because I have to go with the parents.
Yeah.
Does that make sense?
Makes a lot of sense. Yeah. Yeah. And also, you know, I've tried with, I just wanted to finish up the principle and then we'll get to Trump and what he's up to and stuff. But, you know, I've really tried my best as a principle of base camp to be pro-humanity. And even though the liberals left listening to the show, cause they're like, uh-oh, he's moving right, I can't do it, I feel like I've gained a lot more followers. And, but I haven't given up on speaking to traditional Kennedy liberals. Obviously I've done a bunch of shows, but it's like, for me, the principle of like, what is helping my tribe being humanity right now, not just the Trumpsters, right? I love that they're like mm-hmm. getting involved to transform the country, but it's still, my conversations are still about humanity and, you know, how do we elevate? How do we all get there? There's going to be a bunch that are going to come over. Right. There's going to be more walkaways from that crazy stuff. And Trump is really setting the table. And one of the ways he's doing it, and they've tried to demonize all of these people, Elon Musk, Vivek, even Robert Kennedy Jr., they've tried to throw under the bus. Right. I'm like, that's a Kennedy, by the way, lefty, like, you know, like, you know, it's the face of the Democrat, you know, traditional liberals. It's called Kennedy liberals for a reason.
I was going to say something there that it's like you said, you know, you're supportive of that, but I'm also not delusional that they don't have to do anything.
Right.
Nothing hinges on their behavior until it starts to interfere with mine. Like,
right.
So they don't want to come along or they don't want to, you know, blah, blah, blah. It's like, it's totally the serenity prayer.
Yeah.
It's like, what is within my control? What is within my power and what is outside of it? And so I am under no, and it's like, this is a big conversation that we're having about the party right now. And I've had, you know, like, it might fail. It's not doing well. And I was like, you guys, you gotta be willing to let it go.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you gotta be like, okay with like letting go of everything right now, you know? And, because if it stays and it's good, great. But that just, it's kind of like, you know, the idea of lowering the bar. It's like expectations. It's like, if it's meant to go, it's meant to go. And this is bigger than me.
Yeah.
I don't have control over that. I'm going to try to, you know, help it and curate it. But if it's meant to go, that's up to God and that's not within my power. So that's the power of choice. Free will. I love free will. You know, that's it.
One of the things that we're both passionate about, but I know you're really passionate about is health. And one of the Trump, you know, insiders who's really partnering with him is Robert Kennedy Jr. And I'm so excited about this. They're already saying they're already coming out because, you know, you're seeing early stuff. What are we going to do? What are we going to do? And Kennedy's already said we're going to require, they've already done this, actually. They're going to require municipalities and dentists to take fluoride out of the water because there's rock solid data that says fluoride's really bad for humans. There's a huge list of things it does, including lowering your IQ by 8 points, right? And so, and that was a so-called conspiracy theory, you know, for the longest time. You couldn't mention fluoride. Oh God, another crazy conspiracy theorist. Well, now they're requiring it because it's not good for humans, you know? And then the other one that I just know that you love this is Kennedy said, we are going to make aerosol spraying the skies illegal. And I'm like, oh, hallelujah. Because I look up in Seattle on a blue sky and I see the aerosol spraying. I'm like, fuck, again today, they're doing it to us. And so I see that and I'm like, literally sunnier days are ahead of us, both literally and figuratively, the sun is going to be out. And so, yeah, I just wanted to get your thoughts on that because I know how many days you woke up and you're a natural optimist, so many days you're like, they're spraying again. And I'm like, I haven't even had my first cup of coffee yet, you know, and you're like, they're spraying again. I'm like, all right, I'll go to the gym instead of running Green Lake because, you know, God dang it, they're doing this shit to us. You know, I don't know. Yeah, go ahead.
I had a big breakthrough with that. I mean, like, and I think that when, you know, people ask me why I ran and it's like, you know, it was a lot of reasons. Like I just took one step after another and it was the next logical step. But one of the things I've said is that, being involved makes me feel more empowered to things that are outside of my control. And so the spraying was one of the hardest things for me because it was so far out of my control and it just made me feel so hopeless. And so, so that's why I am staying involved is because it's an action I can take that will maybe make a difference that leads to have me not navel gazing and looking at, you know, just at the chemtrails. Yeah. But something about that shifted over the time. It's like, I can see it now and it doesn't bother me like it used to. And maybe that's because of my, you know, running the race that I have. Yeah. And it's just lower on the totem pole of things that I am, you know, I can do. So I don't care about it as much. Right. But running on this was funny. And I'm really glad you brought this up because I wanted to be succinct with my platform and I wanted it to be three things. And so as I went out, I know that, you know, crime was really important to people. Reducing crime, reducing the cost of living. And then what I'm very passionate about is our health and wellness and particularly on the chemtrails. But I was like, I know I couldn't say that. I couldn't come out of the gate because then they would be, you know, conspiracy theorists. So I called it health and wellness. And what I saw with this was really interesting was because, like, it didn't get brought up a lot. It's kind of something that people really don't know what to talk about or what to say about it. It's just too overwhelming for them. But it is such a rabbit hole when you go into the health and wellness because that's the pharmaceutical industry making their billions. You know, so much comes from us being unwell and unhealthy and addicted to their drugs and their system. You know, it is the pharmaceutical industrial complex, and so much hinges on this. That it really is a really important cog. So here's the funny thing is that when I would talk about it with liberals, they would hear me saying, she wants universal health care. And it's funny because people are going to listen to what's in their head. So when I would bring it up, they'd go, oh, good. You know, universal health care. I'd go, oh, you just totally missed the mark. Yeah, no, I'm not that kind of, you know, I'm thinking, I'm not going to deliver that for you.
Yeah,
but you like me right now, so let's just go with that, you know? And, you know, I didn't want to, hey, I got somebody liking me. That's a good thing.
I'm picking up a vote. Yeah.
I'm picking up a vote. Right. You know, but this was that I really saw this. I had a town, I don't know, it was a town hall. I was invited to speak at Shoreline Community College and they invited, this was a really cool idea for this event because there's not a lot of opportunities like this for two sides to talk. It was so great. So we invited the chairs of LD32 from the Republican Party and the Democrat. I happen to be a candidate. The other guy happens to be the mayor of Shoreline. And I thought it was so great because people could literally kind of hear the two sides talking and then they could if they put assumptions aside, they could listen and they could go, oh, I kind of agree with him on that. But you know what? I actually really agree with her on that.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought it was such a valuable event in that way. But when they asked the question about health and wellness, I think because he saw it on my website. And when the Dem answered, he quadrupled down. He goes, we're all sick. We're all going to die someday. And we all need care. And I was like, oh yeah, I think we're all inherently healthy and we just need to access the wisdom of our bodies to get us healthy again. And he's like, we need universal health care. And I'm like, we need wellness care, you know? And that was probably one of the biggest divides on how we perceive our wellness and our bodies and our vitality. And I was just like, whoa, you know, they just want to stick me with, you know, they just want me to pop something in my mouth. And I'm like, no, I just want to unleash, you know, the wisdom of my body and help it to, you know, be vibrant, which we all, that is, I really believe, part of our birthright.
Absolutely. Well,
yeah, so really passionate about this.
Well, and I think that in the next 4 years with Kennedy involved, and people are like, he's pro-vaccine. He has been, but there is so much truth about the vaccines that's out there. Turtles All the Way Down is a must read. And I believe that Kennedy is in his heart. I think he is somebody that is able to stand in truth more than in alignment with any kind of pharmaceutical. And we'll find out.
Yeah.
I'm not doing what Robert Kennedy tells me to do.
Exactly.
Our whole conversation is about sovereignty and empowering Americans. But I believe that it's going to be coming out. There's just too much evidence. And I think it's going to come out like, oh, this whole program is shit for people. And look what it's done to kids. Mm. And look at this autism rates. And look at all of these disorders that got created. I think we're all seeing it. And we're doing podcasts and writing books about it. And I think now we have the people in there that might say, look, we're going to acknowledge this nationally as a truth, because it is. And I think we're going to see that pretty soon.
Well, and I think anytime when they, you know, they find the evidence, and it's like, you know, here's part of this war is that many of these things are absolutely to be seen. And a lot of these people are characters playing a part.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, Kennedy, you know, they're being used by a narrative, you know. And so, you know, it's like dot, dot, dot. But I don't get too hooked up with every minutia of what they're doing, because I just, it's part of the war. It's part of the narrative.
Yeah.
And I think that stuff's gonna be revealed. But one other thing I did want to say about this, the health and wellness, is that as I had to go to the speaking points around homelessness and crime and all these like ginormous issues, and they've put it in that, you know, the rhetoric that it's like, oh, these are too big to be solved. And it's like, nope, they're not. No, you got to break it down. Quit believing that this is too overwhelming. We're really smart, creative, passionate people, and there are solutions to these. And they want you to believe that there's not, because that's part of the disempowering rhetoric. But the health and wellness comes up inside of all those other issues, the homelessness, the crime, the mental health, you know. So this is really, like I said, a part of a lot of the issues we're seeing. And it's like, of course, everybody's like, no, duh. But it's like, well, then you start to get to the root of what these issues are, and then you can solve them, you know, and you can have options to solve them. That's not part of the corrupt system, you know, but that's why this is also so important, is we're in a crisis right now. And I have it on my website. It was Casey Means. And I put it on my website. It is like, she goes down the level of how sick we are. In our very prosperous, wealthy nation, we're super sick right now. And mm-hmm. that is, it's happened fast for how bad we've got.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, one of the things I can see a possibility of happening is a lot of the Kennedy liberals and the centrists that don't like Trump I think there's an opportunity there to start to see him in a different light as they clean up the media corruption and all the stuff that they put out that, you know, they patch things together and then they just relentlessly pound the left with it reinforcing Trump derangement syndrome. And I mean, I saw it as well back in 2016, you know, coming out of that kind of early days of Trump derangement syndrome when they were doing it. And I was like, oh, wait a minute. But I see all kinds of things that make me just love the man. And it's not a cult of personality. It's not like he's a God king and whatever Trump does, I'm going to do, or, you know, he's the answer to everything. He's the leader. He's taken all these hits. But one of the things I love, I just think he's funny as hell, man. He loves the country. He loves family. He loves kids. He loves, you know, the diversity of humanity. I know the left never sees any of this. Mm-hmm. And they see, you know, they see all what the corrupt media wants them to think about Donald mm-hmm. Trump, which is the reason I believe one of the reasons that he won the popular vote is they're like, they're not showing him in an honest assessment. Mm-hmm. They are, you know what I mean? Like, screw these guys. They are lying about this man who loves the nation, loves humanity. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And they're like, he tweets out mean. And I'm just like, God, he's so damn funny. I wanted to just share one of the ones that just cracks me up because I'm a golfer. Everybody knows President Trump's a golfer, but when he was doing one on Mark Cuban, who's a, you know, a renowned globalist, you know, a Marxist leftist, right? Mark Cuban, billionaire Mark Cuban, you know, he said, yeah, Mark Cuban, total loser, you know, mad that I won't return his calls anymore. And then he said, low club head speed, a total non-athlete. And I'm just like, oh my God, for all the golfers out there being, you know, low club head speed, I'm like, that is hilarious. But of course they would chalk that up to he's being mean to Mark Cuban. But I just think he's hilarious. I think that he's got this irreverent sense of humor, and he will poke holes in all the sacred cows of the globalists. And starting right from the get-go last time when he came on the national stage, fake news. And it was so jarring to the left. They're like, how dare he call the New York Times, the Atlantic, you know, CNN fake news. But that's what they were. They were just spinning it. He has been a truth teller and this kind of like wink, wink, I'm going to fuck with them because, you know, they can't take a joke, you know? And
yeah. So
I don't know. I just, that's kind of a riff. It's not really a question as much as it's like, you know, I think they're going to come around. I think they're going to come around all these people. I think they're probably will try to spin more Trump derangement syndrome, but I think the left's exhausted from it. And are you really going to talk all about how terrible Trump is while he's doing all these great things for the nation? You're going to be just really out of step with the way the country and the world is moving right now, don't you think?
Yeah. Well, and I think it's, you know, you said it with the sacred cows, and it's like, how do you get through to people? How do you wake them up? And so these are all the different tactics, you know, so poking holes at them and, you know, with humor, you know, and whatever it may be. But that's the idea, is like, how do you poke holes in their narrative? And you know, and then it goes back to what I said earlier. It's like, you know, the glass half full, glass half empty. And it's like, then what are you, whatever you're perceiving, it's like, you're going to get evidence for whatever argument you have. And so they all are looking at evidence as to how he's, you know, an evil dictator. And I'm looking for evidence. I'm not looking, but I'm watching the evidence that shows that he's really loving and family and really wants the best for Americans. Mm-hmm. And it feels a lot better. I remember one of the trainings that says, you know, it's all a story. We're making things up. Like, it's a story that we're making up. So you might as well make up a story that empowers you, you know?
Yeah.
I'm not talking about an imaginary world here, but it's like, it's so much of it is perception. It doesn't mean that I don't like to see the crime. You know, I'm not making that up. I'm not talking about that. There's literally, I came home the other night, you came home, and I said, there's helicopters that have been going around our house. And they were saying, again, get inside your homes. There's the violent criminal loose in your neighborhood, you know? So it's happening, but then am I going to then find all the evidence as to, you know, around the city where people are in danger? It's like, no, it happened. But now I'm going to look for the evidence that's going to support my safety, my well-being, my the gratitude I have, you know? And so this is really what it comes down to. And so I'm seeing the videos where he is freaking hysterical. They showed his one of the making of the memes. Oh, that was so funny. Oh, and you know, when I clicked on a video the other day that was 9 minutes long. So, this was a long video for us people these days who with our short attention spans. And it literally went through about four or five of the main, you know, things that they were saying about him. And it just dispelled all of them. It showed the longer video clips that of, you know, these all these kind and good people. Remember that one?
Yeah.
And so they walked through a lot of them, and it's like if somebody was open-minded enough, so they had a person has to be open-minded and willing to listen to what we're saying about this. If they could watch that video with an open mind and be willing to see that there could be a different narrative about Trump, then they could see it inside of that, you know? So that's the side of Trump I'm seeing. That's the one I started to see since March 14th of 2020, when I went, there's something afoot here. I don't think they're telling us the truth. I think they're lying. And I said, what else are they lying about? Yeah. And it was like, God put a beam in my head and went, they're lying about Trump. Mm-hmm. And I went, yep. And the whole house of cards came crumbling down. And I mean, I had TDS. And I got treated for it. But you know, but I feel like your listeners need to listen to me on half speed because I've been talking so fast.
We both talk fast. It's okay.
I know, but I've been so excited this entire time. I should have kind of like done a little woo, you know, a little cat call at the beginning to kind of get it out. But there's a lot to look forward to. There's a lot that we're still sifting through, but I'm willing to do it. You know, I'm willing to continue in the fight. And I just hope that, it's been a good ride.
Well, and I can speak from personal experience that, God, I felt so much better when I got out of the Trump derangement syndrome, when I stopped hating him, which was immediately after the 2016 election. It didn't take me long. I popped a little earlier than you, but God, it was just this weight off my shoulder. Like, to your point, all of a sudden I could breathe. It was like this thing of hating this one man was weighing down on my natural love for what was happening, of love of life, love of the, you know, hope, optimism for the future. It was sitting there like some weird thing. And as soon as I took a deep breath and as soon as I started to like look for other inputs outside of what the, you know, mainstream media, the corrupt mainstream media fake news was trying to blare at me, all of a sudden I was like, oh, wait a minute, this feels this feels way better. This feels like I've got room to breathe and I can actually see what's going on with some more clarity, and I feel like more like myself, and I can actually see, I'm not being guided around by the bullhorn. So to me it just felt better. And then all of a sudden I started to see all of the other things, the real video of this thing that they cut, you know, 20 seconds out of and took it out of context. All of a sudden I was exposed to the real thing, and I'm like, wait a minute, that wasn't meant to be taken that way at all,
Well, and it, you know, it comes down to once that, you know, this was a huge moment for me when I heard this, you know, it's like you drink the poison thinking it will kill or hoping to kill the other person, you know?
Yeah.
And that's something that that really resonates with me because exactly I hold, like I get this, you know, this knot in my stomach. And then how then am I used beyond that now who do I hate after that, you know? And so I have to look at then how I'm being used for hatred or fear. And, you know, so Kamala, right? So then they're floating Kamala in front of me and she's just saying things that are just completely not true.
Yeah.
And I'm sitting there and there comes the hatred, you know? And it's like, no, you know, so do I not, you know, a liberal could say, well, you would have, you know, you're sitting on the other side because you're person one. And it's like, no, I'm not hating Kamala. Right. I'm not choosing to go down that road. And And it doesn't mean that I don't like her and I don't like that. But I recognize it and I'm then not going further with it.
Right.
But I was invited to a church last week and he was talking about, you know, let's get out and it's the importance of the vote. And we were up there and he was praying and he said, you know, Lord, dear Lord, pray over Trump and Kamala. And, he's praying over and giving prayers and protection. And when he said Kamala, I went like I braced and I was like, he's praying over Kamala. You know, there goes that side of me.
Sure.
And then in that moment I went, oh, of course he should pray for Kamala because if she's being used by a level of corruption and, you know, like not the light, then wouldn't we want to pray for her so that she could then see that and maybe make a different choice and not be in alignment with that, you know? And so, I'm really choosing my words here because I don't want to say she's on the wrong side or anything like that, but it's just, mm-hmm. it's like really what's in alignment with the light and with God. And if she is, I'm not even saying whether she is or not, but if she is being used by something nefarious, wouldn't we want God to pray for her and help her?
Yeah.
And it's like, oh, of course. And then all of a sudden, you know, so they could use that towards Trump. If they really think he's a fascist, then pray for him if you're really a loving person.
Yeah.
You know, because you'd want to drive that out of him. So, I mean, it's like it gives you this like, I don't know. I mean, it's like you just go higher. Just keep, if you're not feeling good, just go higher and keep going until you reach that point of like, really, what does that mean to have that
Yeah,
that equanimity, whatever, you know.
Yeah, it just to piggyback that a little, like, I didn't really think about it, but me having compassion, I don't hate Kamala Harris, but if I have compassion for her, I can, you know, like, my instinct tells me that she probably didn't really want to run, right? Like, she was ordered to run. She was given orders by her handlers, by the globalists, and that would suck. Like, she got exposed to all kinds of stuff. Do you think she really wanted it? She's probably like, fuck, I don't really want to put myself through this. I mean, maybe she's super ambitious, but she may have just been given the order by the higher ups of the Uniparty to say, you're it, you know, and maybe not really given much of a choice to do it. You know, like, you're going to have the backing. We're going to spend a whole bunch of money and we're going to, don't worry, we'll get you in there. I don't know, but anyway.
Well, who knows? And it doesn't matter. Yeah. It's like, you know, that kind of stuff will come out.
Yeah.
But the point is, it's like if she's being, if she is corrupt on some level and is, you know, wants the power, then that's also not good in God's eyes. She's too, you know, if she's being nefarious in some way. So if she's truly benevolent, then maybe God will, then we're doing a prayer, God will pray. And then I'll see that maybe she's the good one. You know, I don't know.
Right. Right.
I'm not here to, it's not up to me.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, and just to finish up, I wanted to ask you what you got going next. You know, I saw something that came out right after Trump won by General Flynn, who is, you know, really renowned patriot, great general, and a Trump inner circle guy. Maybe I don't know what he's going to be doing. I saw he just retired, I think, but that doesn't mean he won't be in some advisory role. But he said, you know, this is really an early chapter in the movement, and there's just so much to do. So it's not a time. It is a time to celebrate and maybe to get a little bit of R&R, but there's a ton of work to do from the grassroots level, from the ground up. And certainly we can see that in a state like Washington, that was the one state out of 50 that sided with the globalists. That's what do you got coming up next? What are you going to do? Is it R&R time, or are your sleeves going to be rolled up next to kind of further the vision from the ground up of what's being created on the national scene?
Yeah. I mean, I definitely want to be bringing in a little bit more R&R, getting a little more balance, but no, we are not skipping a beat. I mentioned it earlier. We're jumping in immediately on, you know, some stuff that's going on in King County. We, like I said, we got our butts handed to us in this state. And so we're looking at like, how do we grow this party? Really? How do we, you know, if we want it to survive, what do we got to do? We got to change a lot of things, you know? Yep. And so we're already involved on the county level. We have a reorg meeting coming up. And so we're trying to figure out how to shift the bylaws in a way that gives the power back to the people. Mm-hmm. Which is really what's kind of happening right now. It's like, this isn't about me as a leader. I'm really understanding that I'm a steward. And I'm here to help support what the people want, and they're going to start to understand that as they come along and start to understand that they want something different, then I'm going to help that steward that for them. But I'm only here to serve them and that process. And so we're putting those things in place so that they have a place to come to, when they figure out the level of corruption and how, things are not, to benefit them.
That's great. Well, thank you so much. Thank you for stepping up into your leadership with your courage and your heart, your love of the nation, love of people. It's just been so great to watch you take this journey, and being your life partner. You know, you and I both kind of feed off each other's awakening and principles. And I just really so proud of you. Your mother and your father would have been extremely proud of the woman you've become and how you've flexed your leadership. Your dad, especially being a lifelong Republican and a Trump supporter, I think he would have been so proud to watch you talk in front of the room, and lead and stuff like that. So thanks so much for doing that for us, and we've got your back, and any way we can support you, let us know. And just thank you so much, Lisa. Really love you and really appreciate everything you're doing.
And thank you. I mean, you've just been so supportive and really encouraging, and I just appreciate that. And yeah, there was a lot of times when I felt my mom there, just, you know, kind of just providing me some support, and just, yeah, thank you. This has been, I mean, I feel really relieved from what happened on the national level. And, you know, you and I talk a lot about what are we going to do? What was going to be the move? And I don't know, I just see a lot of good options here, and just, yeah, thank you for you and all your encouragement. You're awesome.
Thank you, hon. All right. Let's go down to Grandma's.
Okay. Sounds good. Okay. Bye.
Well, I hope you enjoyed listening in on the conversation here at the Rezac household. With local leaders like Lisa and her new friends, there is a movement afoot to put principled leaders who will actually represent we the people and not the corrupt uniparty into the GOP. There's bright days ahead of us, base campers, and we'll see you around the fire next week. If you find value in our show and wish to show us some love, we are now making that very easy to do. You simply go to www.basecampformen.com and click on Donate Support Basecamp. You'll find an easy way to make either monthly donations for as little as $5 a month, or you can donate just once. We love the monthly donation and hope to build this up over the coming months, but any show of support is greatly appreciated, honestly. Thank you for your support and for helping to keep Basecamp as a resource on your hero's journey. That's our show for today. Thank you for listening. Men, good luck in all your endeavors, and good luck on your hero's journey. This is Tony Rezac, and you're listening to Base Camp for Men.